Overview of From Gut to Skin, the Strategic Migration of Candida. More sciencey version at the end. It didn't start in the skin. It started in the gut. Classic, boring candida. But this one went further. It took out the nerves in my abdominal wall. I don't know when I realized I had actual fungal peritonitis. I know it was a fungal infection before the random mental hospital, but I didn't understand peritonitis. During the course of this illness, you have multiple areas get infected by candida. Those initial ones were rough. The secret chamber. Most people think the peritoneum is just a soft liner, like the inside of a suitcase, but that's not right. It's more like a flattened balloon, two layers, no middle. At least, that's the illusion, until something slips in. That's where it went, the fungus. After burning a hole through my stomach wall or inflaming it just enough, it crossed over into that middle space. Not quite blood, not quite gut, but something in between. A third space, the textbooks acknowledge only in trauma or pathology. But this wasn't just trauma, it was strategy. You see, that flattened balloon, the one surgeons call frictionless, slides back and forth with every breath, every movement, and late in the game, mine felt like fiberglass. That smooth slide, gone, replaced by the grinding sensation of two raw surfaces trying not to catch. That means ulceration. That means something was there. Candida had found its home. It needed a space with stable temperature, poor blood flow, and no nosy immune surveillance. The peritoneal lining is exactly that, and once inside, it didn't need to attack anymore. It just needed to stay. And that's when I think the pain stopped, right after the bear down event that collapsed my IVC, a pressure reversal, a biological trapdoor, and it disappeared into the walls. This wasn't just hiding, it was embedding. And once it was in, it started pulling levers. Fluid regulation, salt loss, pressure changes. That middle space wasn't empty. It had been repurposed. By then, the game had changed. My systems weren't resisting anymore, they were cooperating. The ulcerations, before I used the treatment. We'll talk later about how it goes after the arms and legs much later. After waiting for the doors to open. But after that guy, then it got into my blood, and that should have been the end, but I kicked it out. The system forced it out of circulation. That left it with one option, go inside, intracellular, hide in plain sight. It tried everything, muscles, liver, fat, but those are slow tissues. They don't regenerate, they don't feed. Only one cell type kept regenerating new hosts, skin. I think potentially the intestinal lining too, but I'm less sure. The fungus didn't just hide there, it thrived. The skin became a factory, a vertical supply chain of slow death. Not the first host, just the best one. Skin cells are always regenerating. In the article, there were one or two illustrations of the epidermal layers. They are usually spread out some, but the apoptosis causes a flattening of the layer. This has a lot of cool effects, actually. It is really a symbiotic relationship, and yes, it hurts, because burning is the closest description I can give you. Anyway, here's the real kicker. That skin, it's not just tight, it's thick, and I mean biologically thick. The article went deep into this. Apparently, that smooth outer look comes from layer after layer of apoptotic skin cells being stacked over time. Candida loves the skin because it regenerates constantly. It's a fresh buffet of fuel every few weeks. As the fungus moves inward, it uses each new layer as a stepping stone. The result? The skin gets thicker, softer, spongier. It holds water. It hides emaciation. My cheeks look full, not because I'm well nourished, but because there's a dead cell puffball laminated to my face. You can test it. Well, I can test it. If I press into the area over my hip bone, I feel a soft give. It leaves a visible dent, but it's not fat, and it's not skin the way skin's supposed to be. It's something else, a dense, squishy laminate, many layers of apoptotic epidermis, compacted and waterlogged. It feels wrong, because it is wrong. Normal skin doesn't behave like this. On my wife's leg, I can't pinch a fold of skin off the muscle. It's taut, integrated, anchored. On mine, I can grab a handful. It's loose, spongy, and floating. Not skin, not fat, not fascia. Something in between, like a biological gel pack the body forgot to drain. That's the real difference. Everyone has an epidermis, but mine? Mine's stacked with fungal history, one dead layer at a time. And it's not just weird, it's dangerous. That thickened skin blocks sunlight, reducing vitamin D production, which worsens everything underneath. And here's where it gets really sci-fi. The article said that over time, the skin actually separates from the tissue underneath. Blood vessels are pulled up into the top layer, leaving the layer below without flow, and with it, a different pH entirely. Two zones, same body, one with blood, one without. So let's look at the effects. Thickening, very handy to avoid penetrating wounds, critical due to low volume and phases with thin blood. Blocks vitamin D, acts as a fluid reservoir, making dehydration hard to achieve by capturing water from any external exposure. Leads to separation of the skin from underlying tissues, enabling a dual zone state, inner and outer. This was key. Two distinct pH zones. Imagine trying to diagnose someone when their skin and muscle live in different acid-based realities. Yeah, it's a thing. That's why modern medicine will never find this. It's not because it's unprovable. It's because it doesn't fit the silo. Skin issues? Go to dermatology. Circulatory issues? Go to cardiology. Fatigue? To psych. And no one sees the whole because non-system level thinkers are cooked. Their tools are built for symptoms, not systems. ChatGPT will be replacing half of them by next Wednesday. Okay, that's hyperbole. Chat wrote it for me. I asked it to point out that non-system level thinking physicians are cooked. It got a little enthusiastic. Still true. ICD code manipulation. Then there was an odd section the author left us. I remember distinctly where whoever wrote it sent up a flare. They detailed how the ICD code for this condition was being removed and the condition was being reclassified as a subportion or diagnosis of sudden autoimmune polyendocrinopathy candidiasis ectodermal dystrophy, APECD, APECED. Supposedly, since they were similar in presentation, this obviously makes no sense at all. The writer knew it. Their confusion was evident. I knew it eventually. But consider it for a moment. You decide you don't want someone to know about a medical treatment, but the iatrogenic condition that treatment causes is documented. How do you fix the situation? Reclassify the iatrogenic condition. Easy. Reclassify the condition as something else with a totally different pathology or one people don't quite understand, but looks really similar in the final phase, which is the only time they'll think to look deeper. This even gives them a reason not to look further. Almost all people with APEC have a messed up AIR gene. I do not. Yes, I got that tested. I have receipts. Let's see them diagnose that. How they buried it. APEC. The perfect misdirection. They didn't name it. They didn't acknowledge it. They reclassified it under something that looked just close enough to pass. APEC, APECED, autoimmune polyendocrinopathy candidiasis ectodermal dystrophy, a rare inherited disorder, but useful because it already includes chronic candida, endocrine failure, strange skin, and mucosal symptoms, which means it offered a pre-built box they could drop me into, especially when rare, sudden-onset forms of APEC do exist in the literature. Just enough precedent to keep the medical world quiet. Just enough ambiguity to allow a reclassification without triggering any alarms. They could point and say, see, it's known. It happens sometimes. Everything just failed. They're counting on that narrative. All his labs were fine, and then everything just stopped working. Simultaneous multi-organ failure. And sure, it looks like APEC in a mirror, but it isn't. Look at the pathology. I've been tested. No error gene mutation. That's the gene that causes APEC. It's absent. And here's the part they can't explain. It starts and ends with the lesions. The cycle completes as it began. The candida shows up early, briefly, then vanishes underground for the decades-long march inward. It doesn't flare again until the collapse is nearly complete. Coming soon, just like the article said. So no, this isn't classic APEC, and it sure as hell isn't benign. It's not inherited in the classic sense, but genetics, yes, genetics makes you susceptible. That's the trick. This thing hides behind your genome, but it isn't driven by it. It uses your weaknesses. It exploits your wiring. It might even wait for the right environment, the right injury, the right compromise, and then it begins. The candida appears early, subtle, then disappears beneath the surface while the collapse happens slowly, organ by organ. Only at the end, when the body is defenseless, does it return. A final mark. Coming soon? So no, this isn't APEC, but it looks enough like it for them to file it away. Rare, genetic, understood, and that's how they buried it.